and welcome to Best Girl Grip, the podcast that celebrates the women behind the scenes of the British film industry. I'm your host, Nicole Davis.
Hello, pod pals. I'm currently in Edinburgh, their international film festival. It's been great to spend more time in the city. I've seen an eclectic bunch of films and met some lovely filmmakers. Speaking of which, I'm excited to introduce this week's guest for two reasons. Well, a plethora really, but I'm citing two. The first is that she's at the dawn of what I think is going to be a brilliant career, and part of what I wanted to do with this podcast is delve into how people are making it work when they're just starting out. I think that once you've achieved some level of success, it's really difficult not to gloss over the early part and to maybe forget the struggle or the minutiae, and I think it's really important to see people you admire figuring it out just like you. The second reason is that she's been selected as one of the filmmakers to participate in the Uncertain Kingdom project, which you may remember I spoke about all the way back in episode 1 with Georgia Goggin, when applications had opened, so it feels like quite a nice way to track the journey of the podcast in relation to that. So without further ado, Ellen Evans is a documentary filmmaker whose short films have screened worldwide at Sundance, South by Southwest, Hot Docs, Sheffield Dockfest, and on BBC iPlayer. I had the absolute pleasure of watching her latest project, Country Girl, which I believe is still in post-production, and it's astoundingly good and really empathetic filmmaking, so it made me really excited to interview Ellen. This is episode 24 of Best Girl Grip.
Originally study film at university. I studied English literature at UCL. After leaving, I actually worked for a Labour MP as a caseworker.
Oh wow, okay.
Yeah, so I was an immigration and asylum caseworker for about 2.5 years. I think at this point I was still, I was kind of toying with the idea of doing law and doing human rights law, which sounds really lofty, but I don't know, it was something that I kind of wanted to do back then, and it was through actually being a caseworker that I realised that I was much more interested in, I liked doing casework, it was really hard work, but I think I would have been a really mediocre lawyer. I wasn't actually that legally minded, and I really wanted to tell people's stories, and that is what kind of pushed me to do an MA in documentary filmmaking, because I was coming across all these stories and I thought I would actually really like to, yeah, to tell them. So I went back to UCL and I did an MA in ethnographic and documentary filmmaking.
Is that at Open City?
Yeah, it's Open City Docs. So, sorry, it's Open City. That was, I was actually in the first year.
Wow.
So we were we were the guinea pigs. So yeah, that was a 1 year MA.
How did you even know kind of what to do next?
Oh my god. So after I graduated, I was actually really lucky because a friend of a friend was a producer at a production company called Western Edge Pictures, and they were looking for an assistant editor or an edit assistant, really, to help with the film. They're making this, at that point it was still supposed to be a feature film about Oscar Pistorius. So I joined then. I joined Western Edge Pictures and worked as an edit assistant, I think, for 18 months, actually, on this one project.
Wow, that's a long time.
Yeah, it was a really long time. It was a good education in AVID.
And so you're assisting the editor?
I was much lower down than that. I was sort of assisting the assistant editor.
Okay.
So there was the editor, there was the assistant editor, and then there was me.
Okay. And in that, what's your role in that capacity?
Logging, transcoding, naming files all day, every day. So it was quite monotonous work, but it was definitely, it was the first time that I'd seen how a film was made, like a big film. Obviously on the MA we made our own films, but those were self-shot, self-edited. You know, you work as a little one-man band when you're doing your graduation film. So this was the first time that I'd seen a team kind of collaborate on a project. So I was really grateful for that. On the side, I was doing freelance videography. I still do freelance videography. Okay. So still taking those projects and making little films by myself, but mainly working at Western Edge Pictures.
And did the MA prep you at all for kind of the industry? It was much more to do with the filmmaking process,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it was, it taught us, it taught me everything I know about documentary. So it was a wonderful course. It really, really was. We had such great tutors. Because when I went to do it, I didn't actually think I'd want to be a director. I kind of assumed I'd do this MA and then maybe get to work on other people's documentaries. It wasn't in my mind that I wanted to be a director. And also really didn't know that much about the sort of documentary form, I don't think. It was through doing the MA that I learned and developed a passion for film, really.
And so with the videography, how are you balancing that with your own kind of filmmaking? Are you taking on just projects as and when they come?
Yeah, I have a producer that I work with a lot. She was previously at Film Roundhouse and now she's started her own production company. So I get work through her. But I've been really lucky in the last year since I went freelance. So after I left Western Edge Pictures, I went freelance. And basically I've been applying for and doing all these different film schemes for like young and emerging, or just emerging filmmakers. So I left Western Edge Pictures because I'd landed on this scheme at Film Roundhouse, which is how I met Beth. So I did that. And that was a commission to make a short documentary about love for BBC iPlayer. So that was the very first kind of like a little doc that I did. And then off the back of that, I went and did one with the Indie Training Fund, which was a commission for Sheffield DocFest, a really short 3-minute film, which turned into Life in Miniature. And then after that, I did the BFI and Doc Society one. So I've kind of been cycling through these different film schemes so that I always have a project of my own to do. And then for money on the side, I mean, I do all sorts of things. I still do bits of edit assisting, videography, did some casting last summer. All sorts.
Yeah, taking on board lots of roles. And I'm really interested to know with the schemes, like, do you feel like there's an abundance and there's enough opportunity for you to kind of be doing that, or is it, does it feel quite hard to get funding?
I think I've been really lucky, actually, because, yeah, I'm coming about to do, like, my fourth one in about a year and a half, so I've been really, 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 really lucky. But I think probably exhausting the point of, like, there's only so many times you can be, like, an emerging filmmaker on a, you know, new filmmaker scheme. Yeah. I think that there seems to be a lot of opportunity for it in documentary, more than fiction.
And what do you have to show in that application? Like, do you have, like, a reel, or do you, like, just have the project idea and what your intentions for it are?
Yeah, pitch an idea. Pitch an idea and your intentions. They're not necessarily that concerned about what you've done so far, because the ones that I've done tend to be marketed at kind of new filmmakers.
And where do you get ideas from? Because having just, you just sent me your kind of current project as a girl, and I was really fascinated by, obviously, the main character, Lilith. And where did you even find her? How did that story come together?
So that film started life, actually, as, okay, how do I put this? So in late 2017, I was commissioned by Film Roundhouse to make this short documentary about love for BBC iPlayer. And the idea was that it had to be about a relationship that wasn't just a kind of standard heterosexual narrative. So I explored the relationship between this quite troubled young woman called Lilith, who's autistic, and her horse. So that was, it was like a 4-minute long piece for BBC iPlayer. My producer at the time actually kind of shaped the narrative. She was very involved. But I met Lilith then and I thought she was absolutely fascinating. And I also felt that there was so much more going on in her life than the iPlayer commission really allowed for. Or, you know, I wasn't able to show everything I wanted to in that film. So a year later, when I saw that Doc Society and the BFI were running a new documentary scheme, short film scheme, I pitched a film centred around Lilith again. It's totally different to the first film. She's the same character, but it explores everything that I couldn't explore in the first film, and it has a really different feel to it. Lilith is such a feisty character, and I really wanted to capture that side of her.
I wrote down punk when I watched it.
Yeah. So I wanted, you know, it was, the BBC film was a very, like, gentle, quite glossy look at her. and I felt that I wanted to make something which actually felt a bit more authentic to who she actually is.
I really like, I felt like the end, not to like give anything away, but just the voiceover at the end with what she's kind of saying, kind of, yeah, you feel that resonance throughout with your music choices. And it's interesting in that for someone whose life is essentially quite a tragic story, she's still got that like real resilience and that real sort of like, yeah, fuck you attitude, which I really loved.
Yeah, she's resourceful and resilient, and the circumstances of her life are very hard, but she is a very active character, and that's what I wanted to capture. I didn't want to make a kind of victim narrative with her. She's a kind of anti-hero.
And how did you approach her and say, look, I want to make this documentary about you? How did that go down?
Oh, we've just always stayed in touch. So I think she always knew that I always knew that I wanted to do another film with her. I always knew that I wanted to make a longer, bigger film with her. So I think we must have talked about it even after the first BBC film. We just stayed in touch. She's from not far from where I'm from. So sort of visit her when I go and visit my mum.
Right, yeah. And do your ideas come from people? Is that sort of where the generation of it comes from, or from all over, really?
With Lilith, it's an unusual story, because normally with my documentaries, I treat them like fiction films. So I tend to have an idea, and then I think of a character who really encapsulates that idea.
Mm-hmm.
So my graduation film, for example, which doesn't really see the light of day anymore, but I wanted to make a film about aspiration, and I was really interested in Elvis impersonators. So I made this film about this Elvis impersonator living in South Wales.
Okay.
Because I thought it was really interesting, the kind of tension around somebody who wants to perform but not as themselves, and the kind of aspirations surrounding that. But Juan, who was the guy that I met when I made the film about, he was actually really disillusioned with the whole tribute act circuit. So he actually wanted to make it as his own solo act. So the film kind of followed that. But I didn't meet him first. I really came up with the idea first, and I actually went to the world's biggest Elvis tribute act convention festival.
That must have been a weird experience.
Yeah, it was really weird. I just went by myself, and I kind of had the weekend to try and find my contributor. So it was in Porthcawl in South Wales, and there were just hundreds of Elvis impersonators. And yeah, I met Juan there, and he just stood out to me immediately. So that's how I cast him.
Yeah,
I found him.
Oh, great. Have you seen a film called Orion by Jeannie Finlay?
I haven't, and I've heard about it. I know that I need to watch it.
It's similar in that, it's awful that I can't remember the name, but in that he is an Elvis impersonator and he gets quite famous, and there begins this conspiracy theory that people think that he is actually Elvis, like the likeness is, and that he hasn't really died or that he's been reincarnated.
Yeah.
And it's sort of this like fracturing between him finding fame but as an impersonator, and what that kind of does to the like dislocation of identity.
Yeah, exactly. It's so interesting. I still think it's fascinating. Juan had actually had plastic surgery to look more like Elvis.
Gosh.
But now, you know, obviously he didn't, you know, he said he'd performed Jailhouse Rock more times than Elvis had ever had to, which I think is really interesting. So he felt really trapped in this kind of identity which he forged for himself. But
and do you feel like you have a visual style or a way of telling stories, or is that something you're still developing and experimenting with?
I think it's something I'm still developing and experimenting with, for sure. But I think that humour is really important to me, and character is really, like, I really like to try and get to the heart of who someone is. Yeah, I use sort of voice-only interview in my documentaries. I don't really do sit-down interviews, like, to camera. So they tend to be a mix of actuality and voice-led interview. But my kind of rule for that is to just erase all the facts, so that it's just someone's kind of, it always feels like more like their stream of consciousness.
And do you have to like hone your interview technique? Is that something you've sort of gone through a learning process with?
I don't know. It's funny, because I actually did make podcasts for a bit.
Oh, great.
So that's how I learned how to do an audio-only interview. But No, I think I just chat to people, to be honest. I suppose I'm quite intimate with my contributors, in that I really do sustain relationships with them, and I work in a tiny, 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 tiny group. And by that I mean me and the DP. So, yeah, I suppose, I think that's really important, actually, in order to get people to open up to you.
And what's that like? Does it feel like you're shouldering a lot of responsibility because it's so few people, or is it quite freeing just having, you and the DP, basically?
Yeah, it is stressful, but I feel bad saying it because Tom, who's the DP, is probably like, God, can we just get a bigger crew because this is stressful? But I like it because you can move so freely and it allows things to happen really organically when you're a very lightweight crew. And it allows for you to have a really authentic and intimate, I think, relationship with your contributors. I think that I probably could get a sound recordist because I've been recording sound on all my documentaries and they're not that good. So maybe I'll level up to getting sound recorders.
And is documentary the medium that you kind of see yourself sticking with, or are you also have like fictive aspirations?
I think I do have fictive aspirations. I think that I'm really interested in fiction films which kind of utilise documentary elements. Mm-hmm. So I'm really interested in fiction films where people play themselves or a version of themselves. Mm-hmm. So The Rider by Chloe Zhao, I think, is a masterpiece. And there's a film called, oh God, I can't say it. It's Achiambra, about a Romani community living in, God, is it Sicily? But that's a really similar concept to The Rider, where people are playing versions of themselves and the narrative is kind of built around their own experiences. Mm-hmm. So I would like to try fiction, but I think that documentary will always be an element in my filmmaking, for sure.
Yeah. Is it the authenticity? What is it about? Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And I think I'm so interested in reality, which sounds really lame, but I'm so obsessed with kind of trying to represent the world around me. And just all of my favourite directors do that. And I like these kind of gritty, raw narratives. You know, Andrea Arnold, oh my God. Sean Baker, Tangerine, I think, is a masterpiece. Mm. That, again, had people kind of playing versions of themselves.
Yeah, that's so true. Or even the Florida Project, which didn't, but the, like, non-professional nature of the actors. Casting, like, aside from, obviously, Willem.
Yeah, exactly. Improvised dialogue. I couldn't really imagine making someone stick to a script, or actually really writing a script, to be honest, but we'll see. And the Safdie brothers, I'm obsessed with.
Yeah, but actually, having just seen Country Girl, what's interesting with you having just mentioned all of those is that, again, gritty stories, but not without humour, not without colour, not without a sense of vibrancy. Like, I actually wrote a piece about this, like, mentioning both those films ages ago, where it's like, poverty, but not in a glamorised way, and not in a way that it's, poverty porn or trying to, look down. It's like there's still a sense of an injection of kind of, fun and vibrancy into their worlds.
Yeah, absolutely. That is so, so key. I was really lucky at UCL. One of my tutors was Penny Wilcock, who's stayed as a kind of mentor, and she made, she's made so many different films, and I love all of them, but Tina Goes Shopping, that series, I think is really underrated. That would be my underrated gem. And she always, she makes films about people in difficult circumstances, but who, they're kind of the, they're the protagonists of their life, they're not the victims. And she actually sits with this little post-it note above her desk, and I wish I could remember what it says, but it says something like, nothing gloomy, nothing sad, nothing, and it's a constant, it's a constant reminder to her of the stories that she's interested in.
And how are you putting your project together? Like, are you writing a script? Are you mood boarding? Yeah, what does the pre-production element look like?
So it's currently in my head. It hasn't progressed very far. The fiction that I want to work on is actually a collaboration with the DP that I kind of always work with, Tom Doran, and that's something we want to try and write this summer. But this summer I'm also involved with another film, which is part of the Uncertain Kingdom project. Mm-hmm. It's another film scheme. But that's a documentary. Life in Miniature, which I made on the Indie Training Fund scheme. So that was made for Sheffield Dogfest as a 3-minute film, but I was more fond of the director's cut, which was 4.5 minutes. Mm-hmm. So I sent that to a bunch of festivals. So that went on a sort of tour, a it turned out that the North American festivals really liked it.
Yeah, was it at Sundance? I know it's at Sundance London, right?
Yeah, it played in the documentary section at Sundance, and South by Southwest, and Hot Dogs, and it was funny because it didn't get into any European festivals, like none, none. But the American programmers really liked it, and so that went on tour by itself. I went to Sundance and that was great, but I couldn't go to any of the others because it's making Country Girl. And then I put it on Vimeo and it got staff picked and it's been watched, a lot, which is really surprising.
And did that feel like a turning point? Did you suddenly start feeling more prolific or having more like meetings? What does the festival kind of badge do for a film?
I think that when you get screened at a big festival like Sundance, you suddenly feel more visible in that, lots of other festivals ask for the film, which is really nice. Mm. But it doesn't actually change your life that drastically.
On an internal level, does it give you a confidence boost?
Yes, internally it gives you a huge confidence boost, and I'm so grateful for that, because I was really wondering, I can only ever think of the project that I'm doing and then the next one, and that's really all I can see. I really, have no idea where this is all going beyond that.
Mm.
But getting into a big festival doesn't like change your career that dramatically.
Yeah.
Nobody rings you and says, like, I want to make a feature. That doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But that's also fine.
And is that almost like very narrow focus on each project at a time? Is that kind of how you stay motivated as opposed to thinking of the bigger picture?
Yeah, I think if you start thinking beyond the next project, I think it becomes a bit daunting. And, I'm really into making shorts at the moment. And like that, I feel like I'm just learning how to make films, really. I did the MA at UCL, which was... It was half practical and half of it was writing anthropology essays.
Okay.
It wasn't super, super film focused at that point. So I didn't go to like proper film school. So I feel that by doing these schemes, I'm kind of that this is my film school and I have to keep, unfortunately, I have to keep making all my mistakes in public. But it's just, I think making shorts is a great way of learning and experimenting.
Yeah.
And I think I'm going to do that for a few years until I feel confident enough to try and make a feature.
And as an independent filmmaker, who are you looking to for maybe advice or protection, or is there a culture around you that feels supportive? Other independent filmmakers that you can kind of turn to and say, am I being ripped off? Or how do I get this scheme? Like, what's that like?
I don't know, it can be a bit lonely sometimes, and I'm not attached to a production company. So I have to generate all my work myself, which is liberating and empowering in some ways, but sometimes you do feel a bit sort of out on a limb. I'm really lucky that my sort of MA cohort, a lot of them are doing really well, and we talk to each other really regularly and support each other. Alice, who actually produced a documentary called Halfway, which is a feature doc that was nominated for a BIFFA and a GRIS, and she did so well. Mm-hmm. I'm really proud of Alice. I'm so thankful to her. She's actually going to produce the documentary that I'm doing this summer.
Cool.
So I stay in touch with her, and then our friend Dom. I mean, he's at Minnow now, so he's the director of Minnow, and he's making films for the BBC. So I have friends from my MA that are still doing film stuff, and we support each other.
And is the reward in the work itself? Is it then getting it in front of an audience? What for you is the like motivator behind keeping making films?
I think the reward of making films is the making of the films, which sounds totally mad. It's nice when it's out in the world and people see it, and there's definitely validation in that. But the most magical part is when you're there filming and a contributor like really opens up to you, or you just have these moments of magic in the editing room, that's why you make the films, right? I think the hardest part is maintaining confidence in your projects as they kind of, especially when you don't have the oversight of a production company and you're sort of trying to hold it all together, because you have these sort of waves where you think, this is the best thing I've ever done, or no, this is a disaster, and you're kind of constantly fluctuating between those two poles. Life in miniature was made over something like 6 weeks. It was so short. Mm-hmm. It was really, really, really short. I was commissioned to make this short 3-minute film, and I thought, I'll make it about small things. And then I just got well into the world of miniatures, and I think I called up about 50 miniaturists over 2 weeks, and all of them really boring, apart from Kath, who was the subject of the film, and she was hilarious and amazing and open and honest and everything I was looking for. And then we just got on it, and we filmed it in 2 days and edited it in about 8 days, and that was it, film done. Country Girl took 6 months. Yeah, the BFI, Dog Society scheme, was actually supposed to be 4 months, but we went over.
Were they quite flexible?
Yeah, they were really, really supportive and really great to work with, actually. I think what happened is we didn't shoot enough to kind of cover the story, and they very kindly gave us an extension, and it's a much better film for it. So they were really good to work with, because they saw the way in which the film could be better and helped us achieve that.
And research is obviously quite a big element, and I'm wondering, like, how you go about doing that. Like, how did you know? Is there, you know, a yellow pages for miniaturists?
yeah, you get quite good at that. When, especially if you work in a weird, warped way with the idea, where it's like, idea first, then find the person.
Yeah, you go down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, you really go down the rabbit hole. With the minute, when I was trying to find my miniaturist, I called up lots of people that made dolls' houses.
Okay.
And I said, I asked them if they knew people that made miniatures.
Mm.
And I called up people that ran miniatures fairs and people that ran magazines that were about dolls' houses and miniatures. So that was how I found Kath. And yeah, this new film that I'm making over the summer is based around... it's actually weirdly harking back to my previous job, because it's about a family that's been separated by immigration detention. It's a film that I've wanted to make for ages. Maybe it's the film that I wanted to make when I first started making films.
Yeah.
So we are in touch with some activists and charity groups for that. So yeah, it's about working out the world, how the world of what you're wanting to make the film about, how that world works, and then trying to talk to people within that. Of the whole experience, the film represents like a tiny percent. Yeah, what the film captures is often like incidental to the whole project, right?
And on a technical side of things, did you teach yourself all of the, like, with the editing and, you know, your knowledge of cameras? Is that coming from the MA or?
Yeah? Mm. So on location, it's me and the cinematographer, but I do work with editors.
Yeah.
When I do my own videography, you know, I self shoot and self edit, and it's all horrendous. But yes, on the MA, we learn how to shoot and we learn how to edit.
Mm.
Doing the year and a half, working on Pistorius for year and a half as an edit assistant, that was when I really learned how to edit, I think, because I was watching a really great editor work, Matteo Bini, shout out to him, and I was working alongside a fantastic assistant editor, and John. So through watching those two, I think I got a much better understanding of like workflow and all this kind of thing. So yeah, but on my own documentaries, I work with an editor.
And what's that relationship like? Is it, are you kind of guiding the editor? Is it a conversation and a collaboration?
Yeah, as always, it's a conversation and collaboration. I think I probably spend too much time in the edit room. which for Country Girl was my editor's bedroom. So, you know, poor Ross. And that film changed so many times. Ross and I put together a paper edit, and then I went away, and he put together an assembly based on that paper edit, and then we started talking from there, like what works, what doesn't work. So I usually have a kind of idea of how I would like the film to go, and that is usually dismantled pretty quickly, and then we're sort of working from there.
Is that part of being a good director, like the willingness to chuck away your ideas?
Oh my God. So for me, directing is just about constantly adjusting to failure. You have all these ideas, and then you go and do them, and then they don't turn out at all how you imagined, and then you're sort of like, right, okay, how do we work with what we've got now? And if you, by the end of it, have you know, anything which slightly resembles your original intention, then that's great. But I think you have to be so flexible. Yeah, it's just about adjusting to your own mistakes.
I wonder if a female director or a woman director has to be more flexible, because if they weren't, they'd be called demanding and no one would work with them. That's not really a question, but it's just a thought.
I think it's interesting. I don't know. You know, I think directors like to build myths around themselves, and I think they often say things which aren't quite true to kind of enhance that idea of, because if you're honest and you say, well, actually anyone can be a director, you know, and it's you just have to kind of learn from your mistakes, and we all make mistakes, and it's this constant process of negotiation and collaboration, you know, then you're taking it off the pedestal slightly. And I think some great male directors prefer to keep it on the pedestal and make it inaccessible, and they're kind of guarding it.
So true.
So there's a lot of myth making, I think, from directors. But I do think women are more geared towards conversation and negotiation.
Are there like women documentary filmmakers that you kind of aspire to or look to for?
Yeah, so many. So when I was at university, I was obsessed with Molly Deneen. Oh my god. So it's really interesting, because I was so obsessed with like verite. I don't even think my films are like really, they're not even that verite-y. But Molly Deneen, I love all of her films. They are character driven documentaries, and they are always funny and authentic. And yeah, she made one, her NFTS graduation film is called Home from the Hill. That's brilliant. I sometimes just watch it to cheer myself up. And there's a contemporary documentary filmmaker called Garrett Bradley. She got an Oscar nomination for this beautiful film that she made called Alone, which was about a portrait of a woman whose husband, her fiancé. But Garrett Bradley's short docs are just amazing. Mm. Yeah, really, really beautiful.
And where can we see your short docs?
Okay, so Life in Miniature is on Vimeo, and Country Girl, which I've just finished, is currently nowhere, but we'll see, because hopefully it'll get into a couple of festivals, and then after that maybe we'll put it online or something.
Awesome.
And
thank you so much, that's been brilliant.
Thank you for downloading this episode of Best Girl Grip. You can find all past episodes on iTunes, Spotify, and Acast. Next week, I'll be joined by a guest to talk about the world of graphic design and film, and I'm really excited because it was another opportunity for me to geek out and ask lots of possibly silly questions. Make sure you keep your ears to the ground for that. Have a good week.